Good morning! You're tuned in to Listen Local, the bi-weekly webcast from your neighborhood news source, Mission Local. Brought to you, as always, via BFF.fm. I'm Laura Wenis. I'm here, as usual, with Laura Waxman. Hi, Laura.
Good morning.
And Joe Ronabarros.
Good morning.
Who just ran in the door 2 seconds ago. And today we're going to talk about transit, getting around town. There's been a lot of commotion among our readers, at least, and I think among transit users as well, who have heard or noticed that suddenly a bunch of bus stops on Mission Street are missing. The city's transit agency has taken out, I think, 4 or 5 different stops along the Mission Street corridor, and there are much larger changes on the way. We'll have forced right turns at certain intervals, I believe at 24th and 26th Street. Is that right? Northbound?
Sounds right. It's a little confusing.
And we'll also have a prohibition on left turns off of Mission Street. And that all comes in conjunction with transit-only lanes. So there are 2 lanes on Mission Street in either direction currently, and now one of them will be reserved for buses at all times. Drivers are not happy about this. I think a lot of transit riders are not thrilled about this. And it sounds like just people in general are really frustrated, right?
Yeah, I think emotions are definitely mixed. I'm personally affected because I take the 14 every single day to work. And, you know, there was a bus stop right by my house at Presida. It was really convenient. That bus stop is now gone. I have to walk 1 block over to Powers, which isn't horrible, but I'm also young. I'm away from the coffee shop that I used to go to.
Oh my God, no!
So these are little things, you know, yeah. But I think, you know, some people have bigger issues than that. You know, there are elderly people that rely on these bus stops, and I know it's 5, you said? 5 bus stops that are gone, but those...
Something like that. It might even be fewer.
But those can make a difference, you know? Mm-hmm. So we'll see how that plays out. I did, you know, when I noticed, I think we were talking about this earlier, Laura, we didn't get wind of this until it was actually happening, and yeah. I think a lot of people feel that way.
Yeah. It's amazing, actually. I mean, the SFMTA has done, apparently, a significant amount of outreach, and they've already, this has been in effect for a couple of days,
right.
And they've already painted over all the bus stop signs
those stops are gone.
Right? But people still are waiting there, and not only have they painted over it, there are large yellow signs saying the bus doesn't stop here anymore, go to the next block over, and there are, like, real people in attendance at each bus stop saying the bus doesn't stop here anymore. And still people are waiting at that bus stop because it's just so hard to break that habit.
Old habits die hard. Yeah. But I mean, I actually walked to work the other day because...
All the way to work?
Out of, yes.
Oh my gosh.
Frustration and protest. But so I actually spoke with some people along the way, you know, and some of those, I guess, SFMTA employees... Mm-hmm. You know, who are handing out those flyers. I think the information is very limited. They're probably instructed to just give out the flyers, and people are directed to contact SFMTA with more questions. I spoke to some of the people who were waiting at the stops, and there was actually one man who had a longer conversation with, and he was really frustrated. He was a longtime Mission resident, and, you know, that was his bus stop. And he said he relies on the bus. He doesn't take Lyft, he doesn't take Uber, he doesn't take any of those other modes of transportation. So that's his thing. And he basically just felt like there wasn't enough outreach. He said he heard about it in the news the night before, and then the next day his bus stop was gone.
Mm-hmm.
And his frustration was real, you know? So yeah. I think, I don't know what happened with the outreach.
Yeah, I really wonder about this, because on the one hand, it's really hard to reach everybody, right, in a city. You can't tell everybody about a change.
Especially if you're coming from the SFMTA, being like, hey, I'm from the bus system. Do you want to listen to me? And people are like,
right. I mean, but that, like, there has to be a way for them to do this, to actually reach everybody. And this is not just the MTA. This is, like, every community meeting I go to, the number one complaint is, we didn't know about this. Mm-hmm. Like, we just found out yesterday. We have no idea what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just, like, city agencies, all the nonprofits. Like, there must be a uniform notification system that they could all get behind. That'd be really easy.
That'd be great. Hey, app developers.
Yeah, like an app or email.
Here's an opportunity for you. Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things also that sort of is perennial with outreach things is that not every agency has the capacity to do extensive outreach in Spanish. And I think some of the people that I was walking up to who didn't know that the bus doesn't stop there anymore were next to these attendants. And, mm-hmm. you know, the attendants don't talk to the press, so I couldn't verify this. But my sense is that they just simply don't have Spanish-speaking attendants.
Were the signs in Spanish?
The flyers were.
They were.
The
back of the flyer was.
Yeah. But so, you know, there's people there who, you know, I walked up to and said, hey, the bus doesn't stop here anymore. What do you think of that? And they're like, uh-huh.
Right. Yeah, we have no idea what's going on.
And then we had the conversation in Spanish, and they're like, oh, I have to go down a block.
Right.
So, I mean, like, you know, you'd think that for Mission Street, that would be the number one thought. Like, wait, we should probably do this in Spanish. But sometimes there's just not the capacity for that.
Right. And maybe there should be an agency just responsible for getting the word out on things.
Yeah.
Because, like, asking each agency to come up with its own method, like, that's just nonsense.
I think. Government outreach agency.
Yeah, something like that.
It sounds sort of like the press.
Well, but they didn't even come to us. I mean, we're a local news site, and we heard about this after the Chronicle wrote it. So it's like, well, what's going on, MTA? Well,
we got the press release.
Right.
Or, but, well, we got the press release through somebody else who had read it.
Right, but it's like they should be coming to news outlets if they really want the word out, yeah. And they didn't. So
maybe that speaks to our incompetence more than theirs. But
well, both, I think.
Yay! Yeah, I think also people are really, really concerned with traffic calming measures in general, because now we've got three corridors through the mission that run sort of from Market to Cesar Chavez, right. And sometimes beyond. There's Valencia, there's Mission, and there's South Venice.
Right.
And I think, I mean, just observing, it seems that the city is going for Valencia for bikes and pedestrians, Mission for buses, South Venice for cars.
Right. Yeah, and that's also interesting because it is, I mean, if you look at the nature of Valencia and Mission, it almost seems like it would be favoring the gentrifying part of town to make that pedestrian friendly. And, like, there's an argument that, you know, Mission is a transit corridor, like, historically, and, I mean, those buses are full all the time. People use those buses. It's not just commuter hours. They use them all day long to get to places, so it does need to be bus friendly. But it also should be pedestrian friendly because Mission stops are... No, great shops that should be frequented.
That's, you know, I think that's part of the idea of prohibiting left turns, because they don't want left turning cars to hit pedestrians.
No, that makes sense. Yeah. It would be interesting.
Then South Venice, I know we were talking about that yesterday. Right. That's kind of the...
Just that where the cars will go.
Oh, yeah. It's the high injury corridor of the mission. And we get emails and calls about this periodically. You know, sometimes people just almost routinely send us images of horrific crashes and are like, well... Here's a crash on South Venice again.
You know, it might help, though, to divert the cars, because the problem with South Venice is that it's long and there aren't that many cars on it, so people go fast because they think, well, there's not that many people around.
Speeding
so
if you is have the more, number one concern.
Yeah, if you have more cars, maybe they'll just go slower. I don't know.
What?
If it's more crowded, if people more will not feel like, oh, I can just rush down this block.
Ah, strategic traffic jamming.
Yeah, I mean, who knows?
Joe I'm not has a traffic the answer engineer. To all of our transportation
government agencies and just jam them up. If you're in a car, you're not in a hurry, right?
Maybe,
you have to park at the end anyway.
I don't know.
But yeah, but I mean, I think the fundamental flaw in having three divided sort of thoroughfares for different modes of transportation is inevitably cars need to park. And there is not enough parking for all the cars in South Venice. It's not going to happen. And in fact, horrible. You know, I think the agency recognizes that and got feedback about that and said, okay, well, people clearly want to park very badly. Let's put in parking where we take out the bus stops. It's win-win. The buses are faster and people get to park more. But then again,
you have Mission Street, you mean?
Exactly. So now people have to go to Mission Street to get those juicy extra parking spots.
It's like two... spots per two blocks.
No, it's quite a few.
Really?
I
on each bus stop?
I think it's probably, I would guess four.
So this is just where the bus stop was?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So like that whole curb area where the bus needed to pull up is not
I mean, I think that's such a temporary measure. Like the reality is that people are going to have to stop driving cars and that means the transit's going to have to get better. Like this is just...
Yes.
We can't keep building more parking. It's ridiculous.
Well, that was immediately the other concern that was raised, at least on social media, is... I think one person put it the best and said, you have to have a transit system in order to have a transit first policy.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the transit system's, it's great, but it's not that great. Like, I need to improve it.
You only ride BART anyway.
No, I mean, I was on so I went to the Excelsior the other day on a bus.
Wow, and all the way to the Excelsior.
It was, I ride buses, but yeah, BART is my mode. But it was jam packed the entire way. Yeah. I mean, standing room only.
That's normal.
And that's normal, right? It's like.
Yeah, even you know, my little stretch in the morning, it's always full. And
what baffles me the most is that it's all or nothing. It's either it's jam packed and you have a bus every 5 minutes. mm-hmm. or it's nothing. You wait half an hour for your next bus. I mean, if you're, you know, if you're going home late at night, you really don't have that many options. BART stops at midnight or shortly thereafter.
Yeah, 12:30. Yeah.
Uh-huh. And and I mean, if you're a restaurant worker or a bar back or something or a bartender, and you get off work at 2 a.m., good luck.
Yeah.
You gotta call those lifts.
Gotta call those lifts and Ubers. Or you're working on a story, Laura, about another alternative.
Chariot, but that would not, apply to this population.
For rich people
but
only.
They don't go late at night.
No, so they're
so what's Chariot?
Chariot, yes. So that's, you know, we're talking about transit and its flaws, and so this company is trying to kind of supplement public transit. So that's their whole idea. Chariot is a 14-passenger van, and it works similarly to, I would say, like maybe a Lyft or an Uber, where you can call, you know, or you can it's crowdsourced, it's on demand. You have an app for it. You download your app. You sign up. And I guess the difference is, you know, this wouldn't be called ride share. This is actually micro transit. So it's like a whole.
What does that mean?
It's unexplored, guys.
Right, breaking new ground.
It's breaking new ground. It's micro transit, and this is like these new little, you know, the companies are springing up and really trying to like supplement where public transit is going wrong.
Right, and so they have stops.
They don't have stops.
But I thought they can only pick up passengers
in white zones. So
any white zone.
Yes.
Oh wow.
But right. It's crowdsourced, so like the stops are. Yeah, okay, so okay, you're right. Okay, if you're saying that the stops are depending
or
on how many
people.
More people
are. Okay.
Well, more people who use the service.
Who use the service exactly?
Right. And how do you get in on this?
As far as
do you need an app? Do you need to sign up for a club or something?
So you need an app, uh-huh. or you can use the website. I spoke with the CEO yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
We actually did a little ride along. And he started the service in 2014. It was solely a website at first. So people go into the website, sign up, make an account, and now it's an app. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty user-friendly. You know, I used it. But it's definitely, you need a smartphone. So I guess that, you know, could be a barrier maybe to some people who are using the bus normally. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's definitely some things that need to be worked out. I did ask him about what you just brought up, you know, with the blue collar workers or the people who are getting off late.
Because mm-hmm.
I feel like those are the ones who need rides the most, mm-hmm. you know, especially the ones who are coming to the city to work, maybe in restaurants and don't live here anymore, you know, or live in the East Bay. And I think those services are limited.
I talked to somebody yesterday, speaking of transit from people who have moved away. The folks who were parking on Mission Street, one of them lived locally and worked locally, and the other two that I spoke to in the course of a few minutes, one was from Vallejo, a former San Francisco resident, and one commuted every day from the Central Valley.
Right. Wow.
Ouch. And, I mean, if you have that kind of a commute to deal with, I feel like that sort of tempered his, frustration with the changes on Mission Street, because he was like, if I can handle that traffic, I can handle Mission Street. It's not a big deal.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's rough.
Yeah, and I think, it seems to me that this niche of transporting people who no longer live in the city but still work here or live somewhere else fundamentally and work here and work late or work really early, I mean, I think the city and just local governments in general have been struggling with that for some time. I mean, a while back, sometime last year, I wrote a very exciting story about a bunch of transit nerds getting on a bus at 2 a.m. just to ride the first ever 2 a.m. bus that goes Cross Bay.
Hey, I was there.
You were there?
Just kidding. Just kidding.
Yeah, and I mean, people were excited about that, and it was a big deal because, until then, there was no transit Cross Bay,
right?
You know, past a certain hour, a wee hour of the morning,
right?
And now there's like two,
right?
Which I don't even know actually which.
It's AC what? Transit,
it's
right?
Yeah,
it's not even SFMTA. I guess that's not in their jurisdiction, but you know, it's like there's clearly a need there, and I'm sort of surprised that nobody has tried to address that need rather than the need of people who are stuck in traffic every morning or who don't think the bus system is fast enough during rush hour.
Right. And it was funny, you know, for the story, I talked to different people who were, some of them who were riding Chariot, some of them who were maybe considering it. And I got, you know, mixed opinions. Obviously, the riders all said public transit sucks. And, you know, they didn't want to deal with it. And
it's sort of sad that that's a given.
Oh, yeah. It was, and I think we've all said that at some point.
Oh, yeah.
So it's that's not
guilty
so. Yeah, that's understandable. But, it's interesting. And then I spoke with another person who I caught coming out of BART. And he was actually on his way to his tech job. And he told me, he's like, well, I grew up in the city. I lived in New York in the subway. I use the subway. And he's like, I just feel like this is part of it. And you have to factor that in, you know? Yeah. So I think there's like, there's, you know, mixed people.
Right.
All yeah. around.
Which That's is life. Like, suck it up.
Yeah.
Right. But I mean, like also like I'm totally against the, like the bifurcated private shuttle system. I think it's a bad idea mm-hmm. to start going down that route, but also you can't really blame these individuals who would have to take Caltrain, for instance, like an hour and a half to right. Palo Alto.
Oh,
like,
yeah, and Caltrain, I mean, it's completely full.
It's totally full. It takes forever. It goes to a certain station,
so you have to ride your bike or get some other transportation right. from the station to wherever. So, and then during rush hours, of course, you have bike bumps. I mean, there's people who are just right. regularly kicked off the train because their bike won't fit. Yeah. Too bad. Sorry.
Yeah, that's crazy.
You
know, crazy.
Just you have.
What? And I mean, the bad thing about that is that as soon as you start saying, okay, public transit's really bad, so we're going to have private transit like the Google buses or Chariot, then it makes the public transit worse because then you have fewer passengers and they get less money. So it's just like a downward spiral of these things getting mm-hmm. worse and worse unless there's like a massive infusion of public funds.
Is that true? Do you think that there's really a reduction in passengers due to private alternatives?
That was the question, right? Is like Scott Wiener says there was some sort of survey and they said that, well, most of them would actually drive instead.
Yeah.
Really?
So maybe that's not entirely right, but there's definitely a reduction of some passengers.
Mm-hmm. Well, I spoke with someone from UC Berkeley who is actually attempting to study this mm-hmm. and actually attempting to do some research because there really isn't that much research out there yet mm. on how this will affect public transit in the city. So, you know, her opinion was that basically this is where it's going. It's going to be like a quasi-private public transportation system in the city. And whether that's good or bad, it's too soon to tell.
Yeah.
It's bad. Not good.
Why?
Transit is a public good, like electricity, or which also electricity is private, which is just a sham. But once you start creating two different systems, then you start really furthering the economic inequality of this city. Mm. I mean, it's already a very unequal city, and I don't want poor people to be using one system that then increasingly sucks, and rich mm-hmm. people using another system that they can just pour their funds into. It's like, this is why also private school, like rich parents should have to support public schools even if their kids go to private schools, because otherwise the public schools will suck. It's like the same for any system mm-hmm. that becomes split into.
Point taken. Here's Joe, our resident socialist.
Right. But, I mean, but it is a valid point, you know?
Yeah,
I mean, inequality is the primary concern with any conversation about private transit.
I think that's where these you know, people who are creating these services really have to like step in and make it accessible to everyone. And I think
we've seen how well that worked with the Google buses.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really on the city to do this because, like, mm-hmm. private capital is just going to maximize profit. So it's like Chariot's not going to, you know, and they can't really be asked to do that because they don't have any public funding. So mm-hmm. the city really has to step up and make these systems better, or else it's going to keep losing customers.
Well, I mean, the thing is that also when we're talking about transit, one of the problems that I think everybody keeps running into is that we have such a segmented regional system.
Right.
And really, this area is regional. It's not just San Francisco. I mean, you know, speaking as someone who works for a newspaper that only covers one neighborhood in one city right. in the whole region, but still, I mean, you can see in this neighborhood how many people come from how far away, and it's really bigger than San Francisco. And I think that's a major challenge for the SFMTA and Caltrain and BART, is that they're all sort of trying to pull it together, but they're separate agencies right. at the end of the day, and they just don't work together very well.
Yeah, man, this regionalism problem is like the problem that's facing the Bay Area, because it's like transit, like you said, housing is a regional issue.
Yeah.
Like, there's just so many dreams of regional government, but it's not going to happen, so they're going to have to, I don't know, find a way to pull together. I'm not sure how.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder who they is.
Well, I mean, like, so for instance, BART is a regional agency.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they're just asking for a $3.5 billion bond, I think, very soon. And so things like that. I mean, like, if you already have some regional agencies in place that they have specific mandates, like BART is just for BART, and BART can get better. So doing things like that, raising $3.5 billion from the region as a whole, that helps. So things like that, helping AC Transit coordinate with SFMTA, maybe bring it under one umbrella, I'm not sure.
Yeah. It's interesting how intertwined those issues are of housing and transportation. And it comes up at the meetings where developers present their project, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the big things is that a lot of the affordable housing or housing advocates say, A, that private development should have more transit fees so that they, if they're bringing more people into the city, they have to cop up and give some money to the public transit in the city so we can support that influx.
Mm-hmm.
And also the parking thing, like, my God, everyone complains, number one, well, not number one, one of the top complaints is like, where's the parking for this? And you can tell whenever I go to these meetings, in the planner's eyes or the nonprofit developer's eyes, it's like, what the hell are you people talking about? Parking? We don't have any housing for people. So you're talking about cars right now? Like, I get it. There's a parking problem, but we can't even fit people in this city anymore. What are we talking about cars for?
Well, because people inevitably come with their cars.
Yeah,
I mean, they move in and they're like, I have this car already. I'm not going to... Well... But I don't know, maybe people will sell it if there's absolutely no options for them.
Yeah, and I think actually the studies show that more parking creates more cars. Like the same, like if you build a highway, it doesn't actually ease traffic, it creates more traffic. So it's not, I think building more parking is not necessarily going to alleviate any like existing jams. It's just going to convince people that, oh, yeah, we can own a car here.
The other problem is there's a profit to be made with it.
With parking?
Yeah, isn't there? I mean, you can charge more for a unit, or you can just charge for the parking spot.
For market rate, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's an amenity for sure. Like, you have your own parking space. Great.
And in this town, I mean, there's people who pay like $500 a month for a garage. That's not chump change.
Yeah, no, you're right. That's true.
Yeah, I'm curious about the effect on adding more housing to the transit system. Because, I mean, you know, you assume... I think... Every time that one of us has a bad experience with transit, we assume that it's sort of at a breaking point, or like something is bursting at the seams, right? People get the sense that it can't get worse and something must be done. But like, we're still adding more people. Inevitably. Yeah. I mean, this town is still swelling.
Yeah. I don't know. It does seem to be at the seams to me. Like, it's overwhelmed, clearly.
I mean, BART for sure, right? They keep saying that.
BART. Yeah, buses too. I mean, I don't know. I have no answers here.
Maybe the answer is private transportation.
Maybe, I don't know. Maybe that's where it's going.
Maybe it's inevitable.
Yeah.
Yeah. Alas. Well, let's switch gears before we run out of time here. Let's do neighborhood notes. It's something we haven't done in a while. A little snippet of something cool or something coming up from around the neighborhood. Laura, why don't you start?
Well, if you have nothing to do on Tuesday night from 7 to 9... I would recommend going to Gestalt, which is on 16th Street, Divey Bar, for the mission's first, as far as I know, first pinball league.
A what and now?
A pinball league, if you're into that.
Pinball, like you shoot the ball?
It's like an actual pinball machine. And there's several of them. There's like at least, I want to say like 12 pinball machines in Gestalt, maybe more. And they're all themed differently. You know, there's KISS, there's Game of Thrones, there's a soccer World Cup one, and the best of all, there's a league of people who actually have a tournament going on, and you can join. You have to have no previous experience. You can drink beers, $2 PBRs, and have a good time.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. I went. It was a lot of fun.
So if there's a league, does that mean there's competition?
It's competition, but it's friendly competition. So it's basically...
Who do you compete with?
With each other. So when I went, 15 people showed up, 14 people showed up. And we were all broken down into little groups, and I was usually in a group of three, maybe the newest ones, I don't know, and we would play against each other. So you play against each other with the machine. Or with the machine? Against the machine. Against the machine with each other. So whoever scores the highest against the machine wins that round.
Uh-huh.
And it's so actually the competition is not so much between the people, but with the machine.
Right.
So it was really interesting, and I was actually breaking a sweat, and yeah. Really, really cool.
Wow.
Lots of different people there, different ages. It's awesome.
Hmm. Pinball. Yeah. Cool. I would like to recommend to anybody who is interested in getting a peek into history to go to Marion's, the clothing store with the two storefronts on Mission near 16th Street. It's mostly empty now, but I think if you go before March, so in the next few days before it closes, you can maybe have a conversation with the owner. And it's fascinating because that place has been around for more than 60 years. I think 63 years.
Oh.
And you can tell a little bit from the interior that it's a blast from the past. You know, plus all their stuff is super marked down and cheap now. And it's a little ghost towny because it's pretty empty. But if you chat with them, I mean, there's a chance that they'll pull out the old photos and sort of give you the photo tour of what it was like back in the day.
Memory lane.
Yeah, really. Cool. And you know, the whole staff celebrating New Year in their finery from, you know, that time period. It's fun. Yeah. And you know, the owners are really interesting to talk to. And they also, they set up this sort of a banking system. They set up a credit system, and it's still all in paper files, and they have one of those cash registers with the big button that makes a dinging sound and all that kind of stuff. So it's cool. Yeah, story on that forthcoming also. Joe?
I don't have anything interesting like these two. There's a on Monday there's a pre-application meeting for 606 Cap Street,
what is
which
this
is a
pre-application
new,
meeting.
It's a, so it's a community meeting for a new housing development that's coming in at Cap 606 Cap Street, and I don't know what cross section that is, cross street.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to get your housing on, that's where I'll be, 6 o'clock on Monday.
You can give the feedback, then it that inevitably goes into the Mission Local story about 606 Cap Street. Cool. Well, we'll be back 2 weeks from now with our regularly scheduled programming of news and notes from the neighborhood, and we'll be back in a year, as usual, to see, you know, how things are going. Hopefully we'll continue to do this many years to come. You've been tuned into Listen Local, brought to you by the staff of Mission Local. If you know something we don't that you think we should, shoot us an email, info@missionlocal.com. Thanks for listening.